Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Morning. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is poker player and writer Ed Miller. Ed has recently been making a career explaining why the daily fantasy sports model is broken. He spoke about this on our show a couple months ago. We had so many positive responses from that show that we've invited Ed back to continue the conversation. If we have time, we'll discuss his latest book called The Course, Serious Hold'em Strategy for Smart Players. Ed Miller, welcome back to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you very much. Good to be back.
We received an email addressed to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. We have a newbie to card counting who's been going to his local casino once or twice a week. 6 months have gone by and nothing untoward has happened. One night, a pit boss told the dealer in a voice easily overheard by the player, "If I were dealing with a player like this, I'd really mess with his head. Boy, I'd mess with him a lot." Player left, but came back a week later on a different shift, and the other pit bosses each messed with him a bit, each in their own way. There are a couple of related casinos in this town where he hasn't had any heat at all, but at his favorite one, he's feeling very uncomfortable. He wants Richard to tell him what should he do.
Well, first of all, I've run into this kind of thing before where bosses are trying to let you know that they now know that you're counting cards. But you're so, in this guy's case, he's betting so little that they're not going to throw him out, but they just want to show how smart they are and let him know, you know, and they find entertainment in trying to mess him up while he's trying to keep track, right? So the thing is, if you ever get to the point where you want to bet more money, you're not going to be able to do it in this casino. And word will spread to all the bosses that they all now know that you're counting cards, and they'll probably all continue to come let you know that they know. It depends on what your goal is. I mean, if you're serious, if you're just playing, if you're just card counting as a hobby and you want to earn some comps and things like that, that's fine. If you have any serious aspirations, then I would stop playing there and hope that they forget what you look like after a year or something like that and play more at the other places. The other danger is that if you're in an area with three casinos like that, often a lot of the casino employees are degenerates and they go play at the other two casinos in your town when they're off work. And if they see you in those other casinos, they very likely will mention to their boss friends who work in those casinos, "Oh, see that guy? He's a card counter." You know, so word will spread. What you can do about it, I don't know. I'd avoid the guys who are giving you trouble. If you see them in another casino, I would leave that casino before they rat you out. That's right. What I would do.
Basically, he's screwed.
He's not screwed. I mean, here's the thing I should say. People get really upset the first time they get put into Griffin or OSN or some database and they think, "Oh my God, my career is over." I mean, your career is just starting. Everyone I know, Tommy Hylands, who's been on the poster boy for Griffin for 35 years, still can play more than he wants to play. He has more games available to him than he wants to play. So it doesn't matter how much you've been databased. You can still play.
All right, except when he dresses up like Santa Claus. Then he gets barred.
Yeah.
All right. Now, we've spoken about how tough it is to be an Advantage player in London recently. A recent news item shows it is much tougher in Singapore. Apparently, a player was hole carding at three-card poker at the Resorts World Sentosa. Both the dealer and the player were arrested on one count, with the possibility of 85 more counts coming. I have no idea if the dealer and the player actually knew each other or the dealer was just being sloppy. Under Singapore law, for each count of cheating by play by colluding under a fraudulent scheme or practice, which they consider hole carding at three-card poker, each man could face up to 7 years in jail and a fine of up to $150,000 or both times 85.
Right. So this guy played 85 hands. I mean, I'd love to know how they would go about proving that the guy was seeing the hole card, first of all. And this has certainly happened here in the States on occasion where they've arrested a dealer because they thought the dealer was intentionally giving up the hole card when in reality it was just a dealer who was sloppy. So, yeah, I don't know. Man, that's, you know, you're playing in foreign countries is high risk, high reward. So
I guess
Singapore is a place I don't think you want to mess with, though.
I don't know. There's a new casino opening up in Vladivostok, Siberia, in a few weeks.
I mentioned on my on Twitter that, you know, in my younger days, I would be on the next plane. But, you know, these days, I don't like to travel so much.
The Southwest flight of Vladivostok?
No, I don't think so.
All right. Now, before we get to Daily Fantasy Sports, Richard posted a blog entry on richardmunchkin.com about sharing with others. Before we get into that, I want to strongly, strongly encourage our listeners to go and read the last paragraph of the article. It's a 10-minute extra credit assignment for our listeners. If you want to listen to any more of these Gambling with an Edge podcasts, read his blog or don't come back. Not that I have a clue as to how to enforce this, and we don't really want to chase away our listeners anyway, but I do think most of you who follow this advice will be glad you did. So, the article. Richard, you start off by saying a math teacher is willing to give you your choice of 6 extra credit points or 2 extra credit points. You get to choose which. Although, if more than 10% of the people opt for the 6 points, everybody ends up with 0. All right, Richard, take it from there.
Yeah, so in the article I read, I think the math teacher said he'd been doing this for about 20 years, and only 1 year did any of them actually get any extra credit. Ed would probably know more about this than I. This is common in game theory classes to talk about this, right?
So sure, yeah.
You have experience with the tragedy dilemma, of the commons, it's called?
A little bit, yeah.
Any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's you're going to get... I mean, yeah, most of the time people are going to – enough, especially with that framing, 10%, I mean, you're going to get more than 10% cheating. So
yeah, you know, I was talking to some people who said, well, the students should have all talked about it ahead of time, but I'm not sure that it would change.
No, that wouldn't change.
Because if the students talk about it and agree to all pick 2, there are going to be a percentage who say, well, they're all going to take 2. I should get my 6, right? Yeah. So, but I do want to say when it comes to like blackjack or promotions in a casino – there I'm going for the 6, right? Because promotions, as Big Player pointed out in a comment on my blog, are a zero-sum game. The casino is going to give away a certain amount of money, and the people who get there first to take it are the ones who are going to get it. So there's no way you're going to be able to opt to share with everybody, or I think it'd be a big mistake to try to opt to share with everybody in a casino promotion. But, you know, it's always easier for us to see how other people should share, but we ourselves should, right. You know.
Right. Should. Yes, I want all the rest of you to share.
Yeah. But in the case, I mean, as I said in the article, for me, immediately my thought was I would take the 2. But I was talking to a friend last night who was saying his immediate thought was he would take the 6 because he viewed it as a competition with the other students in the class. And I'm like, you're not competing with it. Unless it's graded on some kind of very weird curve, you're not competing against the other people in the class. You're just trying to get a grade, right? So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, but the article was – it was really about two things. It was that, the tragedy of the commons, but it was also about sharing of information, which is a little bit different. And I have several friends who just don't share any information with anybody because they think they're giving up EV by doing it. And I strongly feel that I've gained much more by giving. You know, I get a lot back in return, you know, so, but I don't know. There's no way to measure that. How, right? How?
Well, I definitely believe that's true for myself. I share a lot of video poker information. I get slammed for that sometimes, frequently, actually. But it's helped my career immensely is to, if I'm sharing, I got to know that information pretty solid before I'm writing about it or talking about it. Which is a whole lot different level of knowledge than if you are just trying to learn it for my own use.
Right. Well, but there's a difference, too, between sharing, like, here's the proper strategy for this particular video poker game, and, hey, there's, you know, a single riffle shuffle in Vladivostok, and they'll also give you a 20% loss rebate. You know, that kind of sharing, I think you're giving up something that's temporary. You know what I mean? It can get burned out very quickly.
And very valuable. Yes. All right. Now, Ed Miller was on the show a couple months ago. He explained how the daily fantasy sports model was broken. The gist of his argument then was that a very few professional players are crushing the game so that the casual player basically has no chance at success. This will lead to the casual players dropping out because it's expensive to play and the game will collapse. Today we're going to expand a bit on those topics. Now, I've never played...
Well, now he has data.
Now he has data. Oh, good. So he can prove how fast it's going to collapse. This is good. Now, I've never played daily fantasy sports, baseball, or any other game. Take me through some of the basics. Assume I'm over-medicated and... it seems to be a good idea to have three right fielders on my lineup. Is that legal?
Yeah, you can have three right fielders. You need three outfielders, so right fielders count.
All right, so, and you need so many outfielders, so many infielders.
Correct.
Is a catcher an infielder?
Yeah, well, it's actually, in the infield is by position. So on the site that I'm playing on more, which is DraftKings right now, because each site is a little bit different about the lineups. It's just they all have slightly different rules just to kind of distinguish themselves. But on that site, you need two pitchers, and those are starting pitchers for the day, and then you need one player at each position except the outfield is just outfield. So you need a catcher, a first baseman, second baseman, third baseman, shortstop, and three outfielders and two pitchers.
Now, there's some utility players who will either play shortstop or third base or second base, depending on where they're needed.
Right.
Is there classifications?
DraftKings will give those players two positions to choose from. So you could put them at second base or shortstop, say.
All right.
But the site owner, you know, it's not just DraftKings in particular. It's just whoever the site owner is will decide what that role is, basically.
But also, I think, rather than narrowing it to baseball, because, you know, you can bet golf and NASCAR
yeah,
and football and all that.
All those games.
I think kind of the more important distinction is the two types of ways to bet, right? The 50-50s
yeah.
or the...
The GPPs, yeah.
GPPs, yep. Right.
Yeah. So those are the two main ways to play the game are there's... what they call cash games, and those are either heads up, where you're just playing against one other person, or a 50-50, which is a large field competition where, say, thousands of people enter lineups, but roughly half of those lineups will get paid, you know, the top half, and they all get paid roughly double. And I say roughly because there's a vig in there. Sometimes the vig is they pay you slightly less than double. Sometimes the vig is that they pay slightly less than half the field. You know, that's the vig is, you know, either one or the other, but that's a 50-50. Is so it'll be like 1,000 lineups can enter and the top 50, you know, the top 500 will get paid, you know, 1.9 times your buy-in, right? So, you know, if you buy in for a dollar, you'll get paid $1.90 if you finish in the top half.
So if you bet on golf, how does How do you have a team in golf?
So in golf, they have just six golfers. You pick six golfers for the upcoming tournament, and they have a scoring system based on pars and birdies and eagles and bogeys. And,
okay.
And then you also get bonus points based on where the player finishes in the field. You know, if you get finish fifth, you get, I don't know what the scoring is, 20 points or something. I don't know. But, yeah.
All right. Very good. Now, at Daily Fantasy Sports, how many people win? How many people lose?
So I recently wrote an article with a partner of mine, Dan Singer, and we came across some data, just a limited data set. So I want to emphasize this is totally a limited data set, and I haven't verified the data. I didn't gather it. It seems legit to me, but I just kind of got to look at it. From our data set, it looked like only about, I think it was, and I forget the exact numbers, but it was something like 8% of the player pool, I think, was winning overall, and then there was another band of players who were roughly plus or minus break even, you know, and then the rest of the field was losing overall. It was like over a 3-month period.
But a large percentage of the money lost was from not a large section of the players, right? Like
right.
The bulk of the money was coming from very few players.
Well, that surprised me. So what surprised me, I expected a pattern where there were a very small number of people who were winning a lot. There would be a slightly larger number of people who were winning a little, like the low roller winners, basically. And then there would be a small band of kind of break-even players. And then there would be kind of a large pool of recreational players. But what we found actually was, while there was a large pool of recreational players, they were really, on average, quite recreational and really were not playing very much at all, at least money-wise. They might have been playing 25-cent tournaments or something, or dollar in dollars, they were not playing very much. But there were a small percentage of the losing players were playing a ton and losing quite a bit. So that the losses were more concentrated than I expected them to be.
Yeah. And what was their reaction to all this? I mean, so you've been very vocal about saying that this system can't sustain itself. And what's their answer to it?
I mean, I haven't heard. I haven't asked any of the site operators directly about that. I mean, they don't. You know, I don't have relationships with the.
They
site
have their
operators.
Fingers in their ears.
Well,
I
don't know what they. You know, I don't know what their perception of the situation is. I mean, they're proceeding the way they're proceeding. I mean, this is just my analysis of, as someone who has played games now for 12 years, someone who approaches this game and sees the large disparity in skill there can be between the sharp players and the not sharp players. And I see, you know, that's what I see. I said, well, this is the way it has to be. You know, in a game like this, the winning players will win a lot, and that means the losing players kind of have to lose a lot. And, you know, and the losing players, you know, and games that puts, that's a risk factor for games. That's what I'll say. I'll say that that's a risk factor for the long-term longevity of a game if it forces the recreational players, the people who don't want to do this kind of as a living, if it forces them to accept really negative returns on investment. Yeah.
So they just got a $300 million infusion from ESPN, right?
Correct. Yeah, I believe DraftKings did. Yeah,
DraftKings did. After
no, it was for Fox.
Oh, the Fox, right. Somebody pulled out. Somebody was going to give them $250, and they pulled out.
It was reported. I think the reporting has been called into question. I don't know exactly what happened,
yeah.
But something
okay.
like that. Yeah.
But they did get this infusion from Fox. But have their numbers been going up? Are they continuing to add players, and the revenue continue to go up?
I believe so. That from the numbers I've seen, it's certainly growing. There's no question it's growing. You know, from the numbers that I've seen, yeah, they're getting more and more players, and they're certainly getting more entries. I mean, the contests are bigger than ever before. So there's no question that this is an industry on the upswing at the moment, you know, and just my concerns have been for the way that the game is structured, that basically it's going to burn out. That's been my perception. I just look at the game and I say, this game is going to get burnt out. Just like you talk about promotions getting burnt out, or, you know, all this stuff. I mean, you know, it's the way the game is set up, it's designed in a way that permits a few parties to really, you know, hammer on it, and, you know, at the expense of the casual player.
But to play devil's advocate, wasn't internet poker really the same thing? I mean, isn't...
So, yeah, yes and no. So first of all, I do believe internet poker suffers from the same problem, and I believe it has suffered from that problem. I think, you know, I think internet poker is... I mean, if you talk to people in Las Vegas, certainly, you know, half of them will tell you internet poker is a scam and it's all fixed and they're all cheating, and they're saying that not because they have witnessed cheating. They don't know what it looks like. It's just because they got killed and they got beaten so badly, they just said, well, it has to be cheating. Or, you know, I do much better when I play live. Well, in reality, it's this exact same effect that I'm talking about. That's what they experienced, is they just experienced a pool of people who were much better than them just hammering on them repeatedly until they gave up. So that's, you know, that is what happened kind of with online poker. But I think online poker offers some limits to that that this game doesn't have. Like, online poker requires a time investment. I mean, if you want to play online poker, you have to, barring a bot, you know, which is now the new problem, but that wasn't the problem, you know, 6-8 years ago, you know, you have to sit there and play the hands, you know, and you can play one table, you can play two tables, you can play four tables, you can play eight tables, you can play 16 tables, but no matter what, however many you play, A, there's a physical limit on how many tables you can play, and B, you get worse for every table you add. That's pretty much demonstrated as far as I can tell, that even the strongest players, once they add table, they get diminishing, like they're not as good a player on each table, you know, they right, just right. think that adding tables, you know, anyway, but so there's point is that there's physical limitations in place in poker that sort of limit how strong players can exploit that ecosystem. My perception is that in this daily fantasy ecosystem, as it currently exists, there are fewer limits to that. I mean, strong players can exploit the system with fewer penalties. You know, there's no multi-tabling penalty. If I enter a lineup in one contest, it's just as good as if I enter it in 100 contests. It's the same, you know, it's just as good a lineup, right? Or
and that's easy to do. You can very easily take your lineup and enter it in 100 contests.
Yes, that's correct. That's easy to do. Now whether that is the... I am oversimplifying. It is probably not the best idea to take one lineup and enter that one lineup into every contest on the site. So that is an oversimplification.
Pretty high variance game you're playing there.
Well, that's part of the problem. The other part is that the games are all slightly different. There's cash games and tournaments, and, you know, and then there's games that are in between cash games and tournaments, like triple ups and leagues and blah, 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 that have lower volume. But you wouldn't want the same lineup in all different formats. But so that's the oversimplification. But the short answer is yes, I can make a lineup right now, and I can click enter there, enter there, enter there, enter there, enter there, enter there, go, and boom, I'm entered into every tournament on the site, from the $1,000 buy-in tournament to the 25-cent dollar buy-in tournament.
All right, let's change topics a little bit, talk about scripting. Let's say we have a big player, say Mike Trout, MVP last year, maybe should have been MVP for the last 3 years, although Tiger fans will disagree with that. Anyway, let's say he's scratched from a game 2 hours before it starts. Assume he appears on a significant proportion of the entries. His price is maybe 10% of your budget or 12% of your budget, so he's a big price player. Now, guys who enter each entry by hand will have a devil of a time taking him out and replacing him in their lineups. Guys who, with computerized setups, presumably could regenerate 1,000 entries in 10 minutes or less. Now, is this another problem where the experts have a huge edge over the recreational players? In your mind, is this a problem that needs to be addressed?
I would actually kind of dispute the framing of that. So,
okay.
So here's kind of how I want to kind of reframe that entire point. So the idea here is that with sort of automated means, you can make entering and maintaining lineups. So I'll lump those together. So the first task is to get the lineup onto the site in the first place. And then the second task is exactly what you described, where, oops, my Trout is out. Now I need to change these lineups. Let me update the lineups. Okay, so those are tasks. Those are basically menial tasks. I mean, it's just entering information on a web form. This is not brain power. This is just clicking buttons. But yeah, so you know, if you do that manually, there is some time investment associated with that process. And if you can automate that task, that reduces the amount of time involved. The first thing is, I would say, is if you have manual, if you are on the manual side of things, so you are only using their web form, you are clicking buttons, you're typing in the names you like, you know, you're probably not going to have 500 lineups. You're not going to have 500 lineups. So when Mike Trout gets scratched, no big deal. You go to your 6 lineups, find the 2 that have Mike Trout in them, and fix them, right? So I would say no, that's not an advantage for the kind of player with the script, because the only person who would benefit from that, I mean, that's you know, the only person who would benefit from that is someone who's already entering tons of lineups in the first place. Now, so people say, well, doesn't entering tons of lineups give you an advantage? That's sort of the next question that people go to. And I would say my first answer to that is actually no. And then my second answer is, but yes. Okay. So the reason why it's no is because, so the kind of tournaments where this would be useful is in the guaranteed prize pool tournament. So this is a tournament with, say, there was one on DraftKings yesterday. It was a $3 buy-in. It had 105,000 entries. 105,000 entries yesterday. Wow. On a Monday.
How many players is that?
It's a lot. I'm not sure exactly, but it's probably 20,000.
20,000 players.
That's a guess. I pulled
with
that
an average of 5 entries apiece.
That's a guess.
It's more like some players have hundreds of entries and some have,
and a lot have 1 or 2 or 3.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I could give you an exact number, you know. But
okay.
That's a guess.
Okay.
So anyway, that's the kind of tournament we're talking about. And so they had a limit on that tournament. You could only enter 200 times. So I did enter 200 times personally. I had a script. There's a script now on a site called rotogrinders.com. It was just published 2 days ago. It facilitates entering large numbers of lineups quickly. I used their script. This has been approved by DraftKings. So DraftKings says this is cool. You can do this to enter our contest. So that's the state of things right now. So you say, well, don't I have an advantage if I'm playing 200? I have 200 times the chance to win over someone who enters once. And yes, I have 200 times the chance to win, but I also pay 200 times the entry, right? So what matters is not that, gee, I can enter 200 lineups. What matters is that each of my lineups has a positive expectation. It's just like anything. I can't add a bunch of negative expectation lineups, and if I just add enough, all of a sudden, I win all the money. Like, it doesn't work that way. So the reason why my first answer was no is because there's absolutely nothing that stops somebody from who understands the game really well and knows how to construct positive EV lineups from constructing them by hand, entering them 10 times, you know, constructing 10 lineups, entering them into the computer, you know, into the web form manually, and getting their EV. Those will be 10 positive EV lineups, and they will, on average, win money on their $30 of buy-in. There's no question about it, right? So, and the fact that I'm there with 200 lineups doesn't really change that, not in the current state of affairs, right? So the only reason why it benefits me to enter 200 lineups is I get more, you know, I get more money down, right? So if I have the skill to build positive EV lineups in the first place, I can leverage that skill at a higher buy-in level to generate more profit, but not a higher return on investment. My return on investment overall will actually be lower. So my percentage win, I would expect to be lower than that super skilled person doing it manually. Because if I could sit there and come up with, you know, I could think about it for 2 hours and come up with 10 lineups that I think are really, really good, like, those would be better lineups than the ones I'm generating, you know, to play 200 lineups. I mean, they would be better lineups. There's no question. So I would have a better return on investment doing it that way.
So did you say that the buy-in is $3?
On the one yesterday, but it varies from day to day.
Okay, but so let's 10 lineups. So we're talking about $30.
Right.
So even if he's a tremendous player and has 25%
right
edge,
he's
earning $7.50.
That's correct, but they have tournament buy-ins up to $1,000. They have $1,000 every day. They have a $1,060 tournament, a $300 tournament, a $100 tournament, a $27 tournament, and then they've got like $12 tournaments and nine and three, whatever. This is sounding like a anyway. So that's just the way it is. So
you're saying you
could,
can get enough money down to make this profitable.
Yeah. There's absolutely room. If you're like, I am allergic to computers, they give me hives. Meanwhile, you're playing a game on a computer. So I don't know, but whatever. So you say, no, this is these people with their scripts and they're, I would say, look, if you have the skill, if you understand this game, if you're good at this game and you can build good lineups, you can make money. There's nothing stopping that person in the climate right now from going out there and making money playing every day. Yeah. So that's my sort of rebuttal to the script people. But there's no question that from my perspective, I appreciate the fact that I can enter lineups quickly.
So, with this tool that you mentioned at RotoGrinders, is this, I have this much money to spend, generate lineups for me that...
No.
Oh.
All the tool does, you have to generate your own lineups, and you can generate them however you want. You can write them out by hand. You can, you can use a tool. RotoGrinders has tools. There's tools all over the web to help build lineups. You can build your own tool.
Yeah, because whatever. I've heard there are these tools that will do what I just said. Basically,
yes. Those are all over the place, and those have been around forever. That's not what people are up in arms about. Uh-huh. What people are up in arms about is this new tool or this new conceptual tool that now is a reality that will take it. Basically just takes a file where you've written your lineups out. So you just write Mike Trout, comma, Paul Goldschmidt, comma, whatever, right, in your lineup. And then it just reads that file in and then turns it into a lineup on the site. That's all it does.
Okay.
All right. Now, in Daily Fantasy Sports, we're betting money, and the winners are determined by a sporting event. There's clearly skill involved. To me, this is a classic example of gambling. But because of certain laws prohibiting gambling in certain areas, DFS operators insist DFS is not gambling. Where do you stand on this, Ed Miller?
So I would say that I think this is a semantic question that is ridiculous. I think the laws that prohibit gambling are arbitrary. Permits horse racing. Is horse racing not gambling?
Yeah, lotteries.
Right? Lotteries not gambling? I mean, so where these lines get drawn, I think, is completely arbitrary. I hear the industry saying this is not gambling. What I really hear, or from my perception, which I think is fair, is they say, look, this law that you passed that prohibits online internet gambling or whatever, the law from 2006, it specifically carves out horse racing, lotteries, and fantasy sports. And they're like, this is fantasy sports. I agree. It's fantasy sports.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it is. I mean, the law says this is allowed. This is specifically named allowed.
Right. So when they passed the law, the Unlawful Internet Gaming Enforcement Act, right, the lobbyists came and said, here, we'll pay you to not – this doesn't count for us. The horse racing and the lottery, and the daily they were smart and went in and paid off the right Congress people. And they said, okay, we'll put it in the law. You get a pass. Thanks for my cut. Welcome to the U.S. government.
Yeah. So the reason why I bristle at the this is gambling crowd is because the reason they're pushing for that is because they're trying to then insinuate that this is or should be illegal. That's their point, as far as I can tell. And from my perspective, this is not even in a gray area. This is specifically permitted in the law that was passed. So I have no sympathy with that argument. Basically.
All right. Let's pretend one or more of the Daily Fantasy Sports League came up to you and said, you're a smart guy, Ed Miller. Fix our model so we can continue to make zillions of dollars and it won't eventually collapse. What changes would you make?
Okay, so, well, this is an interesting question. So The main problem, in my perspective, is the reliance on this GPP structure. That's the game that's most broken, is the large field GPP tournaments, particularly when they have prize pools that are steep. In other words, where the first place prize out of yesterday, by the way, in that 105,000 entry tournament, the total prize pool was $275,000. So you can do the math. That's a $3 entry, 105,000 entries, though they only got like 97,000, but they got close. You know, prize pool 275,000. So there's your vig. First place was 100,000.
Out of 275.
Out of 275, out of 97,000 lineups, right? So
now, are they doing this just because they want to say a guy won 100,000 for 3 hours?
I presume. I mean, I'm not in their head. You know, I'm not in their heads. I don't understand.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot about the way the guys who run these companies that I don't understand. Part of it is maybe because I'm smarter than them and I know better, and part of it's probably because they're smarter than me and they know better. So I don't want to, you know, but I would presume that. I would presume that they favor these structures because they can say, you know, I mean, I certainly got, you know, I mean, that's what their marketing looks like, is come turn $3 into $100,000. So,
right.
Yeah.
All right. So you changed the top heaviness of the guaranteed prize pool. Would you change anything else?
Well, I would actually, not only would I change the top heaviness, I would strongly reduce reliance on that format entirely. The format itself is, it's quite frankly, it's too hard for recreational players. The entire format is too complicated for recreational players. I mean, recreational players, the feedback is they did a survey, a demographic survey of the DFS community that came out 2 or 3 weeks ago. And their number one complaint, or it was people that said, you know, if you don't play, it was like fantasy sports community. And they say, do you play DFS? Do you not play DFS? If you don't play DFS, why not? And then they gave some reasons. And the number one reason was like, it's too complicated. That was the number one reason people gave for why they don't want to play this game. And it is complicated. You go to the site, there's, you know, there's a zillion options. There's Mike Trout, 5,600. Paul Goldschmidt, 5,400. You know, Todd Frazier, 51. What do I do? You know, this is like, you know, and there's like, a, you know, I mean, on any given, there's like 750 baseball players. Like, you know, so this is, you know, this is confounding to someone who just likes baseball and wants to put a fantasy team up, you know. It's, I don't know. So just that part is complicated. And then once you've gotten over that hoop, and okay, now you know how to, okay, I get it. I'm supposed to make a lineup. There's supposed to be 10 players. It's supposed to add up to this amount, you know, and I need to go into this lobby that has a million options that are not explained, 50-50, three-way, this, that, you know, whatever. You know, I go, okay, I put my money down. It says, take my $3 and enter me. And it says, you're entered. And you're like, good. And then, you know, and then the points rack up, and then it says, you lost. And you're like, why did I lose? And, you know. Anyway, so once you get over that hump and you finally, okay, you get it, you understand how the game works, the actual strategy of the guaranteed prize pool tournaments is actually extremely complicated, right? So it's deceptively simple. Build a lineup, put it in, see who gets the best. The strategy is not simple. You know, it's sort of like I would sort of liken it maybe to the, like, the Ultimate X video poker, right? Where it's like, it looks simple, right? You hit a score and then you get multipliers, right? But now there's like 120 different strategies depending on what the multipliers are, right? So it's kind of like that, where if you actually dig in and try to get good, this game is actually really hard. It's not obvious. And casual players are not going to, and furthermore, the intuitive ways that casual players are going to approach the game are particularly bad.
Well, this is the most important topic, actually, is how do we make money?
Right.
What are the ways for the good players to actually make money? Right. Well, that's what our listeners want to know.
Yeah.
Right?
So the idea is, I mean, here's the two insights. So I will say that I'm playing this with the intention of making money. So, you know, I'm not in the position where I'm going to give away the whole house. Right.
Sure.
Now. But I will say these are kind of the two insights that will get you on the right path. The first one, I do recommend GPPs. I like that. For the same reason, I think the format is broken and that the site should move away from it and toward other formats. Is this a good format to attack right now? So The first thing is I would say that the goal is to finish first place. The goal is not to build a lineup that finishes above average. The goal is not to build a lineup that, you know, is safe. The goal is to build a lineup that maximizes the chance that you're going to finish first place. And what that means is that means making certain choices in the way you construct your lineup that sort of maximize the swing or the variance of your lineup. So that's the first tip. It's sort of semi-obvious, but then you have to think about what the, and what that means varies for every sport. You know, so for example, in baseball, it's commonly known that stacking players from the same lineup helps you do that. So if I have, you know, three players on the Blue Jays, you know, and it goes one guy hits a single, one guy hits a double, and the next guy hits a home run, you get extra points for everybody from that course of events, because the single player gets a run, the double player gets, you know, a run too, and then the home run player gets a home run and three RBIs, right? So it's sort of this cumulative effect. So that's sort of, you know, one way to do that. But that's going to be in every sport. There's going to be things like that that you have to think about. So that's the first thing. A lot of the recreational players don't think about that, or at least they don't apply that idea very strongly. So the second thing to think about is that, and this is the part that's really tricky for people, is that you're not playing to get the best score. So you could imagine a game that just like video poker, say, where you say, well, if you score 200 a day, you get paid five times your bet. And if you score 210, you get paid 20 times your bet or something, right? So there could be a game like that where there's some sort of fixed pay scale based on hitting certain numbers in your outcome. Well, that's not this game. This game is we're going to see how everyone scored. We're going to rank them all against each other and see who came out on top. So that means you're not playing to maximize your score. You're playing against the field of players, of other players in your tournament. And your goal is to maximize the chance that you will do better than the rest of them. That's the goal. And that is different from trying to get the most points. So you have to think about what the other players are doing and then make decisions that will give you the best chance against what they're doing. That's what you have to do.
So you want to,
and that's not simple. It is not simple, but that's the right track.
So you want to win or get creamed.
And right. So. Yes. Oh, yeah. No, I mean, on any given day, my lineups are often dead last or very close. I've got one lineup that's like 96,757th out of 96,792 or something. Like, I am often have the very worst lineup of the day almost too.
Yeah. All right. Sounds like he's proud.
So the other way.
Sounds like he's proud of it. But okay.
the other way to make money off this would be, and I don't know the answer to this, but if you believe that this is broken and that it's going to decline, then it'd be you would want to try to bet the don't against the companies, but the companies aren't publicly traded yet, so you can't
Correct.
Short them.
Yeah, no, you can't short them. They're all privately, you know. And, you know, I think, you know, and there's a danger. I mean, as I said, this thing is growing. I mean, I'm going to be in full disclosure here. I mean, I'm surprised we're already at this point, right? So I've been sort of negative on this. I took a look at this product 6 years ago. Okay, it was a little site called Fantasy Sports Live. I talked about it before. And I said, this is broken. I said, this is not going to be a thing. This is broken. Until someone fixes it, this is not going to be a thing. Well, here we are. The companies are worth $1 billion. There's 100,000
well,
people playing
it was
in
like
a day.
The tech bubble of back in the late
well,
90s,
yeah, I mean,
right? I
that's
had a friend who lost $100 million yeah. shorting the
exactly.
the market.
So
going, I can't keep going up, you know?
I would, yes. So I would say shorting it even if possible, which it's not. Would not be without its pitfalls.
But something to think about if
yes.
they do go public after the initial.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, I'm sure it'll go off like crazy
it could.
When it
yeah.
comes out. But
yeah. All right. We're talking to Ed Miller. We're going to take a brief break now for some commercials, and then we got some more questions for Ed in a few minutes. The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. That's more than any other casino has. For the month of August, you can earn up to $500 in Chevron gas cards at essentially half price. Usually, to earn $25 in cash or free play requires an $8,334 because it's a 0.30 club. But for points earned and redeemed in August, you use that same number of points and you receive, they'll take the points, but they'll give you a $50 gas card instead of the $25 in free play. Assuming you believe gas cards are equivalent to cash, this is double points all month long for up to $83,000 and change. There will be a new semester of free video poker classes starting September 16th. This is Wednesdays. It's a 10-week semester. It'll be in the Grandview Lounge starting at noon. For those familiar with my classes, the unusual class this time is Advanced NSU Deuces Wild. This is going to be held near the end of the semester. On the class will be on November 4th. This class goes into great details on the various kinds of penalties. There's a lot of different penalties in NSU. And also understanding the notational conventions in the Dancer Daily strategy cards and winner's guides. This is only taught about once every 3 years. So those of you who want an advanced class, you want to be there. At minimum, you will need the basic and intermediate class, which is the week before, or you could have had it in a previous semester. If you're brand new to video poker, that is not the class you want to show up for. At the Palms, the weekly 7 p.m. drawings on Fridays. Each week they share $10,000. You don't need to be there to win. You need to collect by midnight. They have multiple entries on Friday afternoon and Friday evening. Play for prizes, PFP. For the first 2 weeks in August are Kohl's gift cards. Kohl's is spelled K-O-H-L apostrophe S. And it's a department store, mostly clothing, but it's a department store. They often have online coupons that you can print off for various discounts, which you can use in addition to the gift cards. For the last 2 weeks in August, you earn Walgreens gift cards. The gift cards may be earned and redeemed Monday through Friday up to $190 per day at a rate of 0.2%. You keep your points. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month, $79.95 a year, this allows you to get corrections on most of the games. They have daily, weekly, and monthly contests. The weekly game this time is 100 Play Draw Poker. 100 Play is like Triple Play, only more so. For the same game, if I have a choice of playing 10-cent 100 Play versus $1.10 Play versus $10 Single Play, I'm going for the 100 Play every time. In all three cases, we're talking about the same initial bet, which in this case is $50, although it could be higher or lower depending on what level you want to play at. But the variance is significantly lower in 100 Play. And the fun factor is higher. For me, video poker is a grinded out affair. And so if I can collect my EV with less variance, so much the better. If I have to go to a lower pay schedule to play 100 Play, I'm no longer a fan. EV, in my mind, trumps lower variance. All right. So,
I just want to play devil's advocate for a second there.
Go.
Isn't the 100 Play slower? It seems to me that the it takes time, you know, takes time for all those 100 Play to get revealed so that the game plays slower than
Yeah, there is a speed factor, but
Are a lot less W2Gs that way too, though.
Could be, and you can usually play it for higher stakes. So usually, if you know there's a quarter 10 play, there's also going to be a quarter 100 play.
Ah.
And on a 100 play game, you can play as many lines as you want. You can play one line at the same odds as 100 lines. So you can pick how much you want to play, and some people pick it so that if they're dealt four aces, it's going to be under the W2G. Pick the number of hands for their stakes that will allow them to do that. And so, like, of course, it's their dreams that they're dealt four aces, but it happens periodically. You're dealt four aces about every 50 plus thousand hands, four aces with a kicker. Every 200,000 hands. All right. So we have a another question for Ed Miller. We're getting away from fantasy sports. Ed is primarily a poker player and writer. World Series of Poker is now, they've selected the November 9 for the final event. So these guys are all millionaires and are going to come back and duke it out early November. Now, Ed, do you have any insight as to who's going to win?
Well, I only know one of the people. I don't know any of them, but only one of them is a name I recognize. There's a guy, Max Steinberg, who's in the November 9, and he is a daily fantasy sports player also, as well as a poker player. So, and I believe the story was that he won his entry to the main event on a daily fantasy sports site. So
for $27.
For $27.
So that's better than Chris Moneymaker. It cost Critty Monkey $39 or something.
I bet that was not his first $27 try. I don't know for sure. Maybe it was, but I would be surprised. But anyway, but yeah, so I'm rooting for him. Sure. Rooting for him.
All right. Well, he's about in the middle of the stack. Round numbers, there's one guy with 60 million chips, one guy with 30, four with 20 million, including Max, two with 12, and two with 6. So Max has a middle stack. There's still plenty of play to go.
Sure.
I was sorry to see Negreanu go out. He went out 11th.
I was too, yeah. That was a big bummer. That would have been great if he'd have made the final table.
Yeah. But.
He's a, love him or hate him, he's a good ambassador for poker, and it would have definitely increased the interest. All right, Richard, we got about 30 seconds.
Okay, so we welcome your questions. You can send them to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com, or you can tweet them at me at RWM21. You can get the show delivered to you automatically every week at YouTube, iTunes, Stitcher, or at my site, richardmunchkin.com, and an archive of all the old shows you can find at bobdancer.com.
Very good. So we thank Ed Miller. We thank Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge. Money.